what will happen there.
Okay, yeah, and Salva is here in person, but since his talk includes various video, we'll present it as a recording, but the Q&A, of course, will then be in person. Thank you, Salva, and yeah, let's go with the recording.
Let's talk about our colleagues, and let's focus on the ones we don't know. I'm specifically talking about our open source colleagues. I would like you to introduce some of the people in the Perl-Raku and other open source communities to your work colleagues. Let's get to know each other better, so to speak. So this presentation is a little bit to get you rolling, to get you started. So I'll offer some thoughts and a short how-to and some examples. And I hope this is useful for you. Step one is get yourself a group picture of some developers and preferably yourself in it. If you don't have a group picture, selfies are fine too. To get one, participate in an open source event of some sort, maybe even organize one. There are meetups, hackathons, summits, workshops, conferences out there. Participation is easy. Organizing helps you, though, to get pictures of the people that matter the most to you and your business. Here's an example. This is from the Perl Toolchain Summit in 2018. Next step is map your dependencies and the people connected to them. The goal here is to show that there is a connection between the actual code you use and people out there. Who are they? What are the people? Who are the people that are behind these tools, these libraries and modules and this code. Here's one way to visualize dependencies. This is used, created with something called App Prereq Grapher. There are many similar tools out there. This one was pretty easy to use for Perl projects. Make sure to try to if you can, make a complete picture of your company's dependency tree and from the whole value chains, all the value chains you have. Get the most complete picture you can. And when you've done so, figure out who is connected to each of those and talk about them, introduce them. Share your personal impressions from these. I found that everybody has something positive about them. I try to bring these things forward when I'm introducing them. Try to find individuals that, of course, would appreciate your assistance. Try to go to conferences where they are. Even better, organize something relevant for them and your business and invite them. If you're an open source developer yourself, you can all take the other position, be helpful and tell what you need, what kind of support would you like and appreciate, if any. And, of course, be kind. Not everybody wants help or attention, so it's good to go about this in a respectful manner. Not everybody likes to go to conferences or have their picture taken. This is completely fine. Maybe they're interested in doing something else. Talk with them. If they say no, take note and move on. So, before I show you an example, please keep the following four questions in mind. Who do we depend on? How do we depend on them? Which risks do we care about? And what can we or will we do to address these risks. Now, here's a quick video. So, hello everyone. Thanks for allowing me to speak during this monthly knowledge sharing session. I would like to introduce you to some colleagues that you probably didn't know you had. And I'm seeing my manager is looking a bit troubled that I'm doing something weird here. I'm not hiring people on your behalf, don't worry. What I'm talking about is a group of people who write software that we depend upon and that are manage and take care of important parts of the code that we are actually using in our business. We are, I'm in fact talking about some open source colleagues that we have. What do you mean with this? Let me show you the connection between our software and these people. And to do this, I need to show you something you probably haven't seen before, and that is a small part of our software dependency list. This means I have to find the correct screen here. Let's see. There we have it. All right. Now you should probably see a command line terminal here. I'm going to run a few commands for you. First of all, let's have a look at some of the projects that we are looking at here at work. You might recognize some of these project names. And each of these files that I'm listing here includes an overview of the different dependencies that project has. And to give an example of what this looks like, I can run this command here, and it shows you that in the middle of there, we have a dependency called bhooks end of scope that is managed by a person with an ID Ether. And to give you an idea about what we can do with this, we can pick out all the different dependencies we have and pick out the CPAN IDs that like Ether and make a top 10 list from all of our dependencies of all of these projects. And with that, we get this list. These are people that we actually depend upon. These are their nicknames on the Comprehensive Query Archive Network, and I actually have, let's see, I have pictures of them. This is a group picture where a bunch of these people actually are in the photo group, in the photo. This is from the Perl Toolchain Summit in Oslo in 2018. We depend on a lot more people, but I have one group photo that includes a bunch of these people, and I would like to introduce you to some of them. Here you can see the whole picture. So let's take a quick look. Here we have Olaf Alders. He lives in Toronto in Canada. He takes care of the URI and the LWP and net :// HTTP modules. If you are into anything internet and web related, then you might recognize that these are super important modules that have to do with the getting data from websites and web servers. We use that a lot. He's also active in the MetaCPAN project, which we use to get and learn more about the modules we use. It has documentation, all kinds of stuff. And he's a super nice person to have around. Always smiling, very positive and an encouraging person. And he has publicly told us that he's a fan of Skolebrød, which is a pastry here in Norway. Next person is Ether, Karen Etheridge. She lives in British Columbia in Canada. Quite rural, so far away from anybody, and I guess in a beautiful landly environment. She takes care of Tritiny, Packet Stash, and a whole lot of other packages. Like it almost seems she is taking care of a third of CPAN. It's not that much, but it kind of seems like it sometimes. And I actually asked her at some point, why is she so involved in so much of Perl and CPAN? And her answer was, I like to help people. And I got to respect that. I wish there were a lot more people like Karen. Here is, on the left, is David Golden. He is based in New York. He takes care of CPAN Meta, PathTiny, and several modules that we use. He is very involved in the Perl community and has been so for a very long time. One of the Perl Toolchain Gang regulars. My best memory from him was him taking charge of things that had to be done in the first Toolchain Summit, which by back then was called the QA Hackathon. And you know, the whole thing goes so much smoother, and I'm grateful for him doing his job ever since. Next person I would like to introduce is Ricardo Signes. He takes care of the Test Deep, Test Fatal, and a whole lot of other useful modules. He's based in Philadelphia in the US. He is way too deep into all things email. I'm sometimes wondering if this is good for his sanity, but apparently he looks to be surviving. He's a Perl Steering Council member. So he's the part of the group that now previously was taking care of the Perl project as a whole. Used to be by one person called the Perl Pumpkin, but this has changed recently. And for me, he's one of those people that you can instantly trust. Having him around makes a huge difference, and I'm super happy that he spends his time on our dependencies. This is Graham Knopp. He is an American living in Amsterdam. He takes care of local lib, Moo, RollTiny, and a whole lot of other modules for us. He is a quiet person, super helpful, very approachable, and I've seen him at several other places outside the Perl community. So he likes to broaden his horizons in very positive ways that I agree with. This is Leon Timmermans. He takes care of module build, test hardness, and a lot more. He's Dutch, living in Amsterdam. Super friendly guy, loves to talk about anything, cares extremely deeply about our communities and the code and what's happening. I have noticed that he likes to sleep in, which is fine. That's okay. I like to sleep in too. And finally, this is Kenichi Ishigaki. He takes care of JSON, which is a module that is very important for us. He's critical for quite a few of our backend systems. He's Japanese, not entirely sure where he lives, but he's very friendly and very prolific, and the few times I met him, it makes me want to learn Japanese so we could have better conversations. Always happy to see him around. So these are some of the people we depend upon. There are actually hundreds more. They do all kinds of work for us, but we have to remember that they are all volunteers. They are literally spending their own time sharing their work with us, which means, in other words, we cannot just snap our fingers and expect them to appear all helpful.
Hey,
What?
I was in a Zoom meeting with a client. What's going on?
I just snapped my fingers and you appeared. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Paul Fenwick from Australia. I'm completely confused why you are suddenly here.
Who are you introducing me to? What's going on?
I'm at a Perl conference and conference in Leipzig in Germany, talking about open source community things and business. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit flustered here.
What's going on?
Hi, this is Paul Fenwick. I'm giving a talk about introducing people in the Perl community to that the people in our community introduce others in our community to our business colleagues, so that they get to know us better and maybe even care about the well-being of this community. And
great! Are you talking about succession planning as part of that?
Actually, no. What do you mean with succession planning?
So when you're starting a project, eventually you're going to want to take a break, want to go on holidays, pass it on to someone else. Maybe it gets really, really popular and you need to pass the baton on. And having a plan in place at the start means it's much, much less messy later on. Just having like a yearly affirmation that you want to continue to be a maintainer, that sort of thing's fantastic.
That's brilliant. That's a fantastic point to raise here. But how does this relate to the typical business case?
Oh, of course. It's something which you want to consider in your risk assessments. If you're in a commercial situation, you have an upstream dependency, what if that person needs to take a break? What if they get sick? What if they move on to other things? In that situation, you might want to reach out to them and make sure they actually have the resources and the support which they need. And it might be that your business can help them take a break, can help them, you know, stay strong working on it. Or maybe you can do some sort of co-maintainership. So if they go away for any reason, you know that code is going to be looked after.
That's brilliant. That's an extremely useful point that you bring. I'm really sorry that I pulled you in this way. No idea what happened here.
Not a problem, but I can see my client is calling me back, so I'm going to have to go.
Okay, sorry for everything. Bye-bye, Paul. Hope to see you again.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
Okay, that was weird and completely unexpected. Well, I still hope you got something useful out of this. If you have any questions, please ask. And thank you for letting me share this at this monthly knowledge sharing session. Bye-bye. All right. That was interesting. So I hope you can see this is only an example. It's definitely not the things for your company. You have to figure out the right message for your situation and your needs. But I hope at least you got some inspiration here. So as for the four questions, let's take a closer look at them again. First one was, who does the business depend on? All right, there are a lot of things to say here. Note that I say who they depend on, not what. The goal here is to quickly to establish relevancy for this new connection with these people by generating and exploring your company's software dependency graphs. Make sure each package and library and tool you depend on has an author or a custodian of some sort or some other kind of caretaker actually listed in your overview. There are tools to help you with this. The term to research is software bill of materials. And an example of this is Linux Foundation's SPDX format. If you can use something like this, great, do it. J- just make sure that you at least connect one name to each dependency. And then do the research. Who are these people? What do they look like? So you could recognize them. What do they care about? What are their lives like? So you can introduce something personal about them. Are they happy in their situation? Are there things they would like to do but can't for some reason? A great way to do this research is actually to go out there and meet them. You have to actually get to know them in person. That takes a little bit of effort, but it helps. And I guess if you have already been to open source conferences, you might have already met some of these people, had some beer with them even, or something like that. Just remember to be patient, to treat them with respect, and you'll be fine. Now, how do we depend on them? What are the details? There's a lot of things to think about here. Of course, there's a code and the circumstances around its continued development and maintenance. Most of us will depend on them in the way that they need to spend time and have the attention to it to address any bugs and security issues that or features that need to be addressed. Are they also available for conversations around the code or issues? Do they have enough available attention to take care of all the other related issues that you might find in a project? Do they have the attention to care about the things you care about? As you're looking into this, you might be want to be wary about your expectations. Depending on the size and maturity of the project, some of the code or some of the work, this might require a lot of attention, or none at all. You have to kind of figure this out. A healthy project may still need a bunch of people. For example, somebody responsible for community and stakeholder engagement. How about people that care about documentation and illustrations, people who care about outreach and visibility, training, certification, other kind of sustainability efforts? How about funding or project management or event organizing? There's a lot of work that needs to be done out there if you want to have a healthy open source project with a healthy community around it. All of these and other features like these can be relevant to look at when you want to figure out if the a community has a good long-term sustainability. Chances, though, are that they might fall short on some points, which is okay. That means take note. It means there might be use for you or your colleagues or your company. You might step up and do something. This you might have resources that the community doesn't have. Those are low-hanging fruits for you. Next question was, which risks do we care about? This is an important one. We need to actually take care of what the code does in your company. What role does the component play in your business critical value chains? And you need to ask some hard questions. Are the components exposed by some attack surface or part of an attack surface? Is it expected to be updated in a timely manner for some reason? Or receive some other kind of maintenance? Do the developers respond in a good way, for example, to security issues? there's a lot of things to think about here, and much too much to go into in this presentation. We can look at some examples of projects that with some things have failed in one way or another. I'll try to quickly go through them. Like March 2022, there was a politically motivated sabotage in an open source project where Russian and Belarusian users got their files deleted due to the recent attack on Ukraine. Earlier this year, January 2022, there was two projects, Colors.js and Faker.js, where the developer kind of got burnout or something. That triggered a sabotage, a kind of retaliation against what he perceived as maybe something like corporate freeloaders. And that led to him publishing some malfeatures. Log4j and Log4Shell was a huge issue just before Christmas last year. That was a remote download and execution exploit in a widely used Java logging library. And Ars Technica called it arguably the most severe vulnerability ever. So keep that in mind when I come with another example in a moment. Next one is Leftpad. That was in March 2016, a few years back, where a developer got some legal pressure to remove a package, and this resulted in him unpublishing another package, which led to thousands of projects being broken. That was quite a mess, actually. And in 2014, in April, was Heartbleed, a long-existing bug in OpenSSL, the crypto library that is widely used, that allowed clients to reveal service secrets. It was really bad, and it was so bad that a magazine called Eve Week estimated it cost around $500 million to solve this problem. Now, and this was not the biggest one. Log4Shell was maybe even bigger than that. And there's, of course, more. While it's nice to learn from these issues, certainly when others are making mistakes, it's not always relevant, though. So we have to consciously avoid only looking at the well-known and well-used projects. Most projects are smaller, and while they might be in active use, they can still be in trouble in some way. And a typical fault is the lack of maintainers. One way to measure this is something we call the bus factor. In Perl projects, you can find a bus factor on Metasepan for each project. And if the bus factor is zero, it means there are no developers for this project. It's abandoned or something like that. And finally, there is something called force majeure, like events that are so unexpected or unpredictable that they basically can't be avoided. It might be anything from a small family issue turning into a big one for a developer to a neighboring country suddenly attacking you. This happens, apparently. You could solve this in many ways, of course, but much happens in how you prepare your project. Like, do you have a succession plan? Do you have several developers spread over different countries? Now, there's of course another problem, and that is if your business doesn't do risk assessments, well, then you have to live with the fact that there are some not well-known and not well-used projects that you depend upon that might have unexposed issues, and there's no way you'll discover it until it bites you. These projects are the ones that actually need all those many eyeballs, so to speak, that make bugs shallow. And also, there's another problem which some businesses might bump into, and that's the phenomenon called software monocultures. Like, if you're a Java-only shop, you play an all-in game into that ecosystem, you might have felt how expensive that gamble was now, last year, with the log4shell issue. I hope I've scared you a little bit now. So doing a risk assessment is a critical step of understanding why we need to take care about the open, care about the open source communities we depend on. So please don't skip this step. Now, what can we do, or will we do, to improve this? Well, first of all, let's skip the hypotheticals and soft recommendations. Let's use some strong language like must or will instead of should or can. Just asking if it would be nice if we could support some open source projects a little more. That angle, I don't think works at all, almost. Why not just spell it out? There are risks involved. So let's be frank. If the business doesn't care, if your business doesn't care about the totality of your company's value chain, it's a bit reckless. Now, luckily, moving from reckless to responsible isn't difficult. It only takes some effort. Let's share. I have some thoughts how you might consider when moving towards a responsible position. Here are some questions. Do the devs you depend on have the required resources to do their work? What options do they have to improve the situation? What options do you have to improve their situation? Are the devs in question interested in some kind of support? And if interaction is required, who should do that? If attention is required, who should pay for this attention? On which budget should you pay for this? And could we partner with somebody to make this easier or cheaper or more efficient? Now, one good option is to set up and fund an open source program office, an OSPO, O-S-P-O, in your business. This is an organization dedicated to all things open source and interaction with open source communities and sensible use of open source software internally in the business. There's a lot of material around that, including conferences and presentations. Some of it comes from an organization called the To-Do Group, T-O-D-O Group, and you can also find some related information in the Inner Source Commons. There's too much to go into here, so this you might want to research a little bit here. Just make sure whatever you do, it's properly funded. The amount of open source code in your business is probably huge. And while not all dependencies require attention, it takes time and effort and competence to find out what does need effort, attention and help. And this is not a weekend task in any sense of the it's a lot of work, actually. Now, you can simplify things by finding partners, as I said. One decent source is to talk with your local open source meetup communities, like the Permongers or similar. They might be able to help you find other businesses in similar situations, or give you other kind of advice. Finding long-term solutions is definitely an interesting and useful part of this, which something special for our communities, the Perl and Rocker communities, is that we have a pedigree of thinking about the long-term viability of our projects. Not all meetup communities like Perlmongers are prepared to support you though, so your mileage might vary. Also, you might consider supporting some foundations, open source foundations, or open source industry associations, or similar. There might be bug bounty programs out there, or other kind of supporting organizations, or some accept donations, or allow you to become a membership, become members of the foundation, so you can offer a yearly fee to help fund some work. This might work in some sense, but chances are it'll not exactly do what you need. It helps though. So in any case, if you want to be a little bit more hands-on, you might offer consulting gigs for relevant open source developers. That's a good way of solving problems too. Another more hands-on approach is to just frankly or outright adopt some abandoned projects, take responsibility, and perhaps do it visibly so people can see that you are taking responsibility. Interacting with the community in general can be useful also. Show them that they are needed, that they are appreciated, and that you care for their well-being and are willing to help. Now, let's summarize a little bit, because I think we're running out of time here now. Step one, create some awareness among your colleagues. You should have some ideas on this now. Make sure to adapt your message to your business needs and context. That means getting a proper dependency list or graph of your needs on the software you use, and do a proper risk assessment around these things. Those are your friends. Also make sure that, remember to care. Like, real life issues are real for developers out there. So take this into account when interacting with the members in your communities. Patience and respect can get you quite far. I hope I've convinced you that your business has a stake in the well-being and success of your open source communities. So, and if you agree, then please show it. Stakeholders that don't speak up don't exist. Finally, if your map of the risk landscape isn't reflected, if your map doesn't reflect the actual risk landscape, then your business will experience some nasty surprises sooner or later. You may hope it goes well, and chances are it will do so most of the time, until it doesn't. So hope is not a strategy, and if you want to get progress by waiting for others to fix the issues most important to you, you're not going to get any. And finally, and execute for the long-term health of your business and the communities it depends on. Most of us are interested in the same as you in this sense. So I hope this was useful. this is an open source community. Our lives, we live, I mean, and thrive on cooperation. And nobody has ever solved their problems just by, well, snapping their fingers. What?
What?
Yes, thank you very much, Salva, for your very funny and very inspiring presentation. Thank you. Yes, there is at least one question in the chat. Let me open with that, because it's also my question. Are there any recommended formats for publishing the status or succession status of my modules and my repositories?
On CPAN, there are a bunch of ways to do that. There is a document out there that Neil Bowers wrote quite a few years ago that describes that you can set certain custom IDs as co-maintainers. And those are, I think it was Needs Help and Abandoned, and one more if I don't remember. I don't have the exact one there, but I can share it later. Maybe add it to something. There is a guideline for this. I should probably have mentioned it, but I wanted to do something which is more broader view. So for us who care about the CPAN stuff, yes, there is something you can do.
Are there other questions here in the room? Søren? Are we going to take action? Is the question.
Well, it's actually asking Max.
Oh, it's a question for you. Okay.
Okay, it's a question for me. Well, my plan is I have a lot of modules that I wrote mostly for myself and published them because it's easier for me to install things from CPAN than to install things by bringing a USB stick. But I don't necessarily care about those modules if they break or anything, but I would like to indicate if this module is important to you, speak to me, and if not, then I don't feel bad by breaking it. So, as Salva already said, stakeholders that don't speak up don't exist.
I think this is maybe a little bit of a sidestepping, but I think there is room for general improvement in the Perl community and the related communities. If we think about, like, how do we recognize if something needs help? Now, we have those special IDs on CPAN that you can set as co-maintainer in order to flag a certain need. And you have the bus factor that was added not long ago. But we can also make who is part of the project more visible, for example, contact information, and make it in such a way the information available on, for example, MetaCPAN, so that those questions that I have been asking here are easy to find answers for those, maybe in an automated manner. But in general, right now, we have to do the work ourselves.